And I'll now call the Conservation Committee to order. All right, first order of business is approval of the previous committee meeting minutes from the November 2nd meeting, which have already been distributed. Motion for approval?
So moved.
Commissioner Jones, second?
Second.
Commissioner Hughes, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Committee item one, update on the Parks and Wildlife progress in implementing the TPWD Land and Water Resources Conservation and Recreation Plan. I think Carter has a presentation for us today.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chairman, Commissioners, for the record, my name is Carter Smith, and thanks for the opportunity to talk a little bit about this. And visited a little bit about this at the outset of the Regulations Committee and the conversations that the Chairman and I have, and then in turn Scott and I have had about, you know, a need to come back and revisit the plan. You know, all of you know this is our strategic plan that really guides at a big scale the decisions of the agency. You've asked us to operationalize this plan in terms of making sure that we're executing appropriately on the goals here. But I want to go through you kind of a benchmark of where we stand today with respect to our ability to achieve kind of 25 key deliverables that were authorized by the commission, and then suggest a process for how we go back and identify another set of actions and deliverables for the agency to be pursuing. Again, just by way of background, I think all of you are aware that the Land and Water Plan was originally adopted by the Commission 10 years ago, and that was an artifact of a legislative directive to help put together this strategic plan. We have since amended that plan on two occasions, most recently 2 years ago, and that is the plan from which we're operating now. I think it's always helpful to go back to what are the four overarching goals of this plan and make sure that we're always looking at what we're doing to make sure it's consistent with these goals and helping to advance them. You know them well. It's making sure that we're focusing on the best science and based stewardship, that we're looking to maximize opportunities to participate and get into the outdoors. That we're doing everything we can to help educate a growing Texas about the importance of conservation and outdoor recreation. And then, of course, last but not least, in our fiduciary capacity to our hunters and anglers and park enthusiasts who pay for the bills of this agency, that we are acting as good fiduciaries for their funds in the public trust, and making sure that we're employing the best possible business practices in everything we do. As I mentioned before, you know, the Commission has a very strong expectation that this is a plan that will not sit on the shelf, that we will use this plan then to be operationalized. That's happening through division operating plans and then specific individual performance goals for all of us inside the agency. Again, as you will recall, there were really 25 major deliverables that the Commission authorized and asked us to track and be responsible and to report back to the Commission to give you some sense of how we're doing with respect to accomplishing these major goals. This project is managed out of our project management office, which brings an important level of sophistication just to tracking and monitoring this throughout the agency. And obviously, we have been reporting back to the Commission at every meeting with respect to where we are. One of the things that the Chairman and I have talked about is, you know, again, how we make this process a little more participatory with the Commission, a little more dynamic, and just give you a better picture of things as they're going on, as they're happening, as opposed to simply reporting on what's happened and before there are opportunities to make changes. So how are we doing? Again, 25 deliverables. We've accomplished 20 of those, one of which, another one we have partially met, and that four we have not met for reasons which I'll elaborate and which are further elaborated on in the report that Scott and his team produced and which was just distributed to you. And just a couple of examples of some of the key accomplishments. This commission has long been interested in the Texas outdoor family as a way to help get Texas families into the outdoors, and recognizing that We can focus a lot of effort on getting children into the out-of-doors, but if their parents and mentors do not know how to participate in the out-of-doors, it's unlikely that those kids are going to continue in those activities. And so this is a program of our state parks. You had asked us to host 650 families annually, and as you can see, we hosted a little over that in 2011, and I think we're well positioned to continue meeting that in spite of, you know, some pretty significant cutbacks with our state parks team. And we are looking for additional sponsorships just to help keep this program going. Very important that the element of the commission in terms of making sure from a technology perspective that we're using the most current and contemporary technology. We had set a goal of trying to have wireless technology at 70 sites throughout our system, not only for our staff use, but also our customers. And so folks had access to the internet and so forth. Our state parks team, our IT team, our infrastructure team have just done a great job, and we've got 92 sites across the agency now that have access to wireless technology. Also, we had set a goal to have solar panel systems at 15 sites throughout the system. Our infrastructure team, as you can see, has set up 24 systems at 16 sites, including the headquarters. And there's a great interpretive display right outside the door here in the lobby that talks about the energy that we're able to generate and hence conserve through this practice. Real pleased with that result, and Andy Chamberlain from our team working with Rich and others, it made that come to fruition. Also, I'd be remiss if I didn't acknowledge the State Energy Conservation Office, who helped fund this to the tune of $4 million, largely through federal grants. Also, you know, we talked a lot about this with respect to our conversation on bobwhite quail, but again, we can't reiterate enough how actively our wildlife biologists are working on a voluntary fashion, helping to provide incentives and technical information to private landowners around the state. I mean, they are doing that every single day, and that program just continues to grow and grow. We had set a goal of having 26 million acres under wildlife management plan. You can see where we stand now. We have almost 27 million acres under plans and a little over 7,000 landowner cooperators. Now, to put that in context, you know, that is almost 19% of all of the terrestrial habitat in the state under some form of wildlife management plan. So the scale here is really important in terms of what our wildlife division is achieving in cooperation with private landowners, and I'm awfully proud of their work. So what are some examples of things we haven't met and why? We all know the importance of prescribed fire on the landscape, a really important tool in terms of habitat management, managing fuel loads. We had set a goal for the agency of participating in 25,000 acres of prescribed fire. You can see that we fell short of that, and some obvious reasons. This drought has really exacerbated things. You know, there have been times in which there have been, you know, 217 of the 254 counties across the state that had burn bans. So very, very difficult to burn safely in these kind of environments, and obviously our teams respect that. So a very easily explicable reason for why we hadn't been able to accomplish that. But you know how important this goal is, and we'll continue to push hard on it. We had also set a goal, again, consistent with the Commission's directive of trying to increase public hunting from 1,400,000 to 1,500,000 acres across the state. You can see that we've not been able to meet that. A couple things I want to point out. I mean, we've talked about the past divestiture of timber company lands in East Texas, in which we had big blocks of land leased for the public hunting program, and many of those acres are no longer available for public hunting. Also, to be fair, we probably overcounted when we set this goal of how many acres we had available for public hunting at Big Bend Ranch State Park, which, you know, encompasses 325,000 acres, and we had counted as part of this that all of those acres were available for public hunting, and they're not. So we have an adjustment here. That being said, we know this is a very, very high priority, and Linda Campbell and her team, Inland Fisheries, has been involved on this. Have secured a fairly significant grant from USDA to go out and lease additional acres for public hunting and also fishing access, as well as habitat work. And so we're redoubling our work on that. I saw Linda last week with some of her team members that are working on it, and please know this will be something we will continue to push on your behalf. This is an example of a partially met deliverable where we set a goal of stocking 39 million fingerlings a year. We actually exceeded the big goal, but again, because of drought conditions and golden algae, we weren't able to quite meet our goal with our inland fishery hatcheries, again, for reasons which are well understood. Probably an opportune time for me also to say, in spite of this very, very blessed rainfall event that we just received, I mean, we have two of our inland fish hatcheries, one in Electra and one in Athens, that we've been in real danger of being able to lose access to surface water to maintain our hatchery ponds. And so the situation is serious. Certainly the water issues affected our ability to produce as many trout for our winter trout stocking that's so popular that we're doing right now. But going forward, this very well could impact our ability to produce fish going forward. So I want to make sure that y'all are aware of it. Gary and his team are looking at the possibility for potentially using groundwater as appropriate, a couple of these hatcheries to maybe help mitigate this circumstance, but the lack of available water in terms of impacting our inland fish hatcheries is a very real challenge for us right now. With respect to going forward, what I would respectfully recommend, consistent with what the chairman and I have talked about, is his desire to have a retreat with all of you, not unlike a retreat that this commission had a couple of years ago to really deliberate and think about the most important deliverables of this plan and focusing on the goals. We think that would be a very timely opportunity for this commission. Also, that our team could work to help identify additional specific deliverables that would help advance these goals that we could bring to y'all for your consideration and discussion at that retreat, and identify again these new deliverables that we could track. We think it makes sense to keep the project management office continuing to track this, and for us to report this, albeit in a different capacity, at the commission meeting. So with that, I'll stop there and see if there's any questions about the Atlanta Water Plan.
Any thoughts or questions, comments?
I think retreat's a good idea. If we're going to do it, let's try to get on everybody's calendar pretty quick. Is that where you're heading with it, Dan?
Yes, absolutely. I agree. So just start that process.
You got nine people to try to
right organize.
Like Stack and BB's.
Let's try to get something locked in next week if we can.
Okay.
Good.
Okay. Yeah, we'll work with you on some possible dates, Chairman, and locations, and get one nailed down.
Great.
Okay. Chairman, if there are not any more questions on that, there are a couple other items I just want to make sure they have a chance to update y'all on. I think many of you are familiar with this red tide event that we have experienced since September. You know, historically we see that natural phenomena occur down in the lower Laguna Madre in the early fall, but because of the lack of freshwater inflows and the drought and the heat conditions we've experienced, you know, the red tide now exists, you know, all the way up to Galveston Bay. And so this is a very long-standing and long-running event. Because the fact that the oyster beds will absorb that red tide and then have the capacity to pass on a neurotoxic shellfish poisoning to those who consume infected oysters, the Department of State Health Services closed the oyster season in the state. That was effective November 1st, which would have been the opening of commercial oyster season. It's still closed. Normally the season will run through the end of April. We don't know if it will open again this year. That's in the purview of the Department of State Health Services, and certainly we're working closely with them on that. But suffice to say, you know, oystermen around the state have undoubtedly experienced some significant damage or harm as a function of this natural phenomena. And so we're concerned about that, and certainly so are they. But I wanted to just let you know the status on that. Beginning the 1st of February, we'll open a new game warden cadet class there at Hamilton. We had almost 700 applicants for 44 positions there at the academy. Again, speaking to the competitiveness of this program, almost as hard to get into that as it is to get into Texas Tech. I will also point out that we have a new pilot position open in the with the law enforcement team. That position is required to be a game warden. We had 40 pilot applicants for that one position, so a lot of interest in that, but we think this is going to be a very important hire. So excited about that cadet class going forward. The team there doing a great job of training these cadets, and I mean just literally world-class officers that are being put out there. Very, very proud of all of them. It's also that time of year in which our administrative resources team, Julie Horsley, is leading the agency through the development of the natural agenda. This is the 5-year strategic plan that the legislature asks us to put together in advance of our submission of our legislative appropriations request. And so Julie works on that plan in consultation with all of the divisions to make sure it comports with the land and water plan, but it's also a prelude to the most important issues that we hope to discuss with the legislature with the submission of our legislative appropriations request in August. And the natural agenda of this plan is something that she'll be coming to this commission in March to talk about and secure your approval before we go forward. So I just want to let you know that that's moving ahead. Last but not least, just a quick update on our internal affairs program led by Major Graham Jones. The unit has certainly been very active as of late with respect to investigating a wide range of complaint allegations. Just to reassure you, nothing that would cause any of you undue alarm. They're also very, very active in the educational component, in-service training for our state park peace officers and our game wardens around the state. Important to note, last week was the culmination of a boating accident that I think all of you are familiar with at Lake Buchanan that our game wardens had been investigating for almost 9 years, if not more, on a hit-and-run accident that was just an absolute tragedy. And we're very, very pleased to see that come to a close, a very complicated case with a long downtime. Again, a very, very successful investigation by our game warden's internal affairs team, and they just did a very, very good job working on an issue that was very, very sensitive in the local community, and it resulted in the tragic loss of a young teenager who had an enormous amount of potential. So very proud of the team and their work with the district attorney's office there and seeing that come to successful fruition. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to close and see if there's any questions.
Thanks, Carter. Any questions?
Commissioner Doug? Did the person who, I guess the boat was found buried in his backyard, was he convicted by a jury trial last week?
Or? There was a settlement and a plea bargain that was worked out, and the family were happy with the verdict, and so just rendered last week.
Good.
Tough one. Very tough.
Good update. Thank you, Carter. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Item 2, Edwards Aquifer Recovery Implementation Program and Designation of a State Scientific Area. Request permission to publish proposed rules in the Texas Register. How are you, Senator?
Do you need to
talk about
calls?
Thanks. Good morning. Just barely. For the record, my name is Cindy Leffler. I manage the Water Resources Branch here at Parks and Wildlife. Spend a few minutes this morning talking to you about the Edwards Aquifer Recovery Implementation Program, or EA RIP as we call it, and the request to publish draft rules in the Texas Register for establishing a state scientific area in the San Marcos River. And Colette Baron Bradsby, Legal Division, is actually up at TPEQ Commission this morning, so that's why she's not here. Okay, a little bit of background refresher here. The Edwards Aquifer serves as a primary drinking water source for over 2 million people. Covers quite a bit of territory. It's also the source of two of the largest springs in the United States, San Marcos Springs and Comal Springs. Also an important water source for agriculture, industry, recreation, number of things. Associated with these springs, San Marcos Springs, Comal Springs, are a number of federally listed species. So eight federally listed species. Wendy Connolly's presentation this morning was a good kind of introduction set up to this concept of recovery of these listed species. The EA RIP that I'll be talking about is a program that's been underway in Texas for 4 years now to actually recover or help recover these species listed here. So I'm going to focus a little bit more on the San Marcos River in particular in these two species, so Texas wild rice and the fountain darter. Texas wild rice is a true Texas native. It's found, the only place it's found in the world is in the upper 2 miles of the San Marcos River. And the fountain darter is found in the headwaters of the San Marcos River and the Comal River. Texas wild rice has very particular requirements. And it's an aquatic plant. It spends most of its life submerged underwater, emerging only to flower. The graph in the lower right-hand corner is the spring flow of the San Marcos River, and you can see from this graph that the kind of the jagged orange line going through the middle of the graph is more or less what's considered normal or the median flow, and you can see the decline of the spring flow over this past summer quite a bit less than normal due to the drought conditions. And just kind of FYI, this morning checking this information, this data, there was a nice twice what the average looks like, or the median, I'm sorry. So that was good to see. Okay, so talking about the EA RIP, this is an open, voluntary, collaborative, stakeholder-based process. It's been going on, as I mentioned, since 2006. The goal of the RIP is to help recover these federally endangered species that I mentioned. Though it started as a Fish and Wildlife Service-initiated effort, it was codified by the Texas legislature into Senate Bill 3, and so now there are requirements in state law for us to work within the EA RIP. So Parks and Wildlife is a member of the steering committee, as well as a number of other agencies you see there. And here today, I'd like to thank them personally, are the program director for the EA RIP, Dr. Robert Gulley, the science director for Texas State's Texas River Systems Institute, Dr. Tom Hardy, and then Dr. Glenn Longley, who is the director of the Edwards Aquifer Research and Data Center. So they've been, and Melanie Howard, who is with the City of San Marcos, she's the watershed program manager. And so these are folks that have been very important to the EA RIP effort, gotten to know them quite well over the last 4 years, and so I really appreciate them taking time to come today. So just a quick update on where we are status-wise with the EA RIP. We have been working, you know, as a group to try to reach consensus on identifying strategies for protecting spring flows, especially during extreme drought periods, now and going forward. Very happy to report that late last year, in December, we did reach consensus. The Edwards Aquifer Authority Board of Directors approved that draft habitat conservation plan and funding and management agreements, and that whole package has been submitted to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, who's now reviewing the HCP. They're working on developing the EIS, and they're expected to issue an incidental take permit before the end of next year, or I'm sorry, before the end of this year. We're in 2012 already, and that incidental take permit will allow the pumpers of the Edwards Aquifer, San Antonio, Edwards Aquifer Authority, San Marcos, Texas State University, and City of New Braunfels to continue using that important source of water as their water supply. So, might kind of pick up that this is a pretty big deal. You know, this was basically solved, if you will, 20 years of contentious legal wrangling started back in the early 90s with the lawsuit Sierra Club filed against Fish and Wildlife Service. And so just a few of the headlines that were in the media last month to kind of, you know, really put a point on how important this reaching this point has been. Okay. So I'm going to spend just a minute or two talking about what is in this Habitat Conservation Plan. We refer to this as the bottom-up approach. We refer to it that way because it's a set of strategies, incremental, phased in over time, to get us to that end goal of protecting the spring flows, the amount of water flowing at the spring orifices. So it's a combination of things, reducing pumping from the aquifer during drought, additional water conservation in some of the smaller communities around San Antonio, this idea of aquifer storage and recovery, and that's an innovation that allows you to take water during good times and actually bank it and store it underground in an aquifer for use during dry times. So it's it really hasn't been used much in Texas, but I think there's a lot of potential in the future. Another important part of the EARIP bottom-up package is this concept of voluntary suspension of irrigation rights. So that's something that Edwards Aquifer Authority will implement. And then an additional new critical period management stage 5. They currently have 4 stages that get progressively more stringent, and they would implement a new stage 5 that would allow even more conservation during drought periods. And then second to the last bullet, talking about ecosystem restoration, managing exotic species and recreation, that's where the state scientific area proposal comes in. We'll get into a little bit more detail about it, but that's where it fits into the whole HCP process. So talking about the San Marcos River in the state scientific area, as we've discussed before, the recognition that the San Marcos River is a very important recreational resource. Over 500,000 people use this as a resource. That is something that must be considered as we go forward, with trying to manage the species as well as protect, or manage recreation as well as protect the species. The draft rule that we'll be talking about in a minute has been fully discussed with the folks at the City of San Marcos and with the university folks. They fully support this draft rule. It's something that's been talked about through the EARIP process with all the members of the EARIP, and so the concept came about as, truly as a part of the RIP process. And there is support that we'll get to in a minute. So just a couple of quotes there that I thought really kind of highlight the goal with the state scientific area that came from the joint letter submitted by Texas State University and the City of San Marcos. Just really getting at, trying to strike this balance between managing human use and protecting the species. And the second point there about, trying to really use this as an educational opportunity to help raise awareness about the importance of these species and what this is and why we're taking this approach. So some of the details of the actual proposal for the proposed rule. So what we're talking about is the San Marcos River, approximately 2-mile stretch from Spring Lake Dam to the wastewater treatment plant, only the public water portion of the river, not private land at all. The proposal would, at any time, any flow rate, would prohibit uprooting of Texas wild rice. So that would be unlawful. We would be working with the stakeholders there, City of San Marcos, Texas State University, and others, to develop and implement a public awareness campaign. That would also happen early on, and that would be something that would take place at all times. Then we would also work with the partners, Texas State, City of San Marcos, to work on ways to redirect access away from the more sensitive areas, provide better access points where appropriate. Then during low flows, and it's been identified with 120 CFS based on work that was done by the university, at 120 CFS, the department, again working with the partners, may go in and implement physical barriers to protect the more sensitive, the more threatened areas of Texas wild rice as the flows drop. So that's something that would happen only during certain low flow periods. And then under all of this, there would at no time be areas restricted from bank to bank that would prohibit or would impede the ability to recreate or to float downstream in the river. So that would not be part of it. So summary of public comment or public scoping, I'm sorry. Several meetings in December, one including at the San Marcos Lions Club. And here today also is the president of the San Marcos Lions Club, Al Green. We also had a couple of public scoping meetings, one at the Texas State University campus. We had about 32 folks show up, had a good discussion. Comments were generally favorable at that meeting. There was one commenter that thought that it probably wasn't necessary to protect Texas wildlife, but in general, the comments were favorable. And then on December 13th at the City of San Marcos, 11 participants, and that evening the comments were supported. In addition, we've also received 12 comment letters or emails to date. 10 comments support the designation of the state scientific area, and the logos that you see there are kind of representative of those entities that support the designation. One comment opposed closing the San Marcos River, and I think that was the thought that we were somehow coming in and saying that there would be no recreation allowed. So that was that comment, and then one comment was off topic. And the urgency for needing to kind of proceed with this at this time, I think this map, we're tired of seeing these maps, these are updated periodically, and really hoping to see one that does not show Texas as all brown. But this is the most recent one, and the forecast, the outlook for continued drought, at least through the end of April, which is about how accurate about how far out the accurate predictions can go, looks for no relief. And so, given that, besides the nice kind of spike in spring flow today, given the current status of flows in the San Marcos River, we think it's imperative that we have the ability, if this rule is approved, to be able to, when recreation season really kicks in the summertime, to be able to help to protect those, especially sensitive areas of Texas wildlife. Okay, and with that, we request permission to publish this proposed rule in the Texas Register for public comment. And with that, I'm finished. If there are any questions.
Carter, do you have any comments on the significance of the rift?
I mean, that is a Herculean accomplishment. I don't think that can be overstated in terms of the stakeholder group led by Dr. Gulley that worked through some very, very, very complicated and what many perceive to be intractable issues, and it is, I think, one of the most remarkable accomplishments this state has seen with respect to water conservation in terms of the work of that group. Commissioner, it's having that many entities with so many divergent interests come together to agree on a suite of strategies that they're all getting behind, again, is absolutely nothing short of remarkable, and really proud of the work that Cindy and Collette and others on our team did in terms of representing this department and this agency is part of it, but just absolutely remarkable.
Any discussion by any members of the commission?
Cindy, can you go back to three or four to that map that shows the 2 mile stretch? I think you need to go back one more. There you go. Are you able to pinpoint which sections of the 2 mile stretch would be affected? Because I know I noticed you said that no private property would be affected, and from what I understand, not all of this 2 mile stretch is affected.
So we do have very good records, very good information and data about where Texas wildlife occurs today, thanks to some of the work that the department has done through Jackie Poole and through the work that Dr. Tom Hardy has done. And so we have a very good handle on where Texas wildlife is today. And thanks to the work that Dr. Hardy's doing, we can predict which segment or which stands of wild rice, if you will, would be most at risk as the flows drop. Being able to predict how deep the water would be where those stands are. So I think to answer your question, we have a pretty good idea of the areas that need to be, have this physical protection in terms of barriers.
Well, are you able to point to that those places on this map?
On this map?
Yeah.
This map is kind of too small in some ways. I mean, it would take a map that needs to be spread out on the table, but we could do that.
Well, I guess what I'm asking is I'm trying to understand the extent of the affected areas.
Okay.
I'm not able to tell by looking at this map or from your description how much of this 2 mile stretch would is actually affected. I mean,
okay.
Where there will actually
sure.
be a barrier placed.
Dr. Tom Hardy.
On the one extreme, you'll have a barrier that goes for 2 miles on both sides of the river. On the other extreme, you might have a few hundred feet of barrier. And I'm just trying to get in my head. What are we talking about in terms of restriction?
For the record, I'm Dr. Tom Hardy, Chief Science Officer at Texas State University for the River Systems Institute. The areas that have been identified are very localized, often no more than maybe 10 or 20 square meters in area on river right on a bend. You may go another 100 meters before you would have another small patch. No time in this would there ever be a barrier on both sides of the river, but just very localized areas, maybe a 10% of the entire river would be affected by this action.
And I suppose we're going to, this is going for comment or whatever, so we'll have to look at this again at the next meeting.
That's correct.
As we get those in. When y'all present at the next meeting, can you have a highlighted map that shows the areas that you are targeting for?
Absolutely. We have that in great detail.
Okay. That's all.
Can provide it by section for you with specific areas that we've already identified.
That's all I need. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Hardy. Jackie, is there anything? Jackie Poole is a staff botanist who's one of the experts on Texas wild rice, has been monitoring those populations for a long time. Jackie, is there anything else you want to add to Dr. Hardy's?
All I would add would be that, and I'm Jackie Poole, botanist, Parks and Wildlife, for the record, all I would add would be that there's less than 5,000 square meters total of wild rice in that entire 2 mile stretch, so Tom probably knows how many square meters there are in the entire river, so even if you looked at the entire population, yes, it occupies probably much less than even 10% of the river, so this would be a pretty tiny area overall.
Okay. All right. Sounds good.
Any other comments?
Just one comment. I was going to thank Cindy. I did ask back when this was moving forward last fall to get the stakeholders and the people involved, and y'all have obviously done that, and I appreciate getting everybody. I just want to make sure everybody was on the same page. That was my concern. And
yeah, no, I really appreciate that, Commissioner. As you will recall, at the time there was the issue with New Braunfels and the Kamal and the Guadalupe and the container ban, and we had talked about a concern about whether or not there would be some bleed over into this issue for folks that didn't understand the distinction between what was being proposed to accomplish here. And so I think we heard you loudly and clearly on that, and Cindy and Colette and others, they've been out there in the community, so I think we've gotten good feedback on this.
Yeah,
thank you.
One question I had, Cindy, is what is the source of the legal authority of the USF&W to regulate the take from the aquifer?
Well, look who appears just in the nick of time. Colette Barron, Bradsby, Texas Parks and Wildlife Attorney.
Yes.
How do I handle that one?
I'm sorry. I was representing the agency on a contested matter in front of the TCEQ, so I could not be here right when you started.
We're glad you were there.
Thank you. We actually got a pretty favorable outcome. It was the BRA case.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Could you repeat the question?
What's the source of the legal authority of the USF&W to, if they have any, to regulate the take from the Edwards Aquifer?
Are you talking specifically about taking wild rice or about any
water.
Of the...
Wasn't it... Maybe I misread the slide. I thought it was a...
Well,
the Endangered Species Act.
Let's go back to it.
U.S. Fish and Wildlife administers the Endangered Species Act in terms of non-marine species, so it covers fish, wildlife, and plants. CAKE is kind of a term of art within the ESA, so that agency, there's a prohibition against the take of endangered species. There's only a prohibition against the take of endangered plants when they are on federal property. So there's a very limited slice of the pie that's given over to plants. There is this Endangered Species Act does not allow endangered plants to be brought into commerce, but that's pretty much the extent of the protection for the plants. The ESA is a very, very strong law, and it is paramount to other laws. Congress had expressed a very strong directive to protect these endangered species. If the species are being taken in violation of the ESA, the powers of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service are pretty broad. They can prosecute the taker, those who are taking. They can enjoin additional pumping from the aquifer to protect the species. There's a whole suite of tools that are available to United States Fish and Wildlife Service, and nobody wanted that here. There's already been litigation where the Fed said, yeah, we're going to come in and do this if you can't figure out a way to manage this aquifer in a way that protects these endangered species. And I'm going to echo what Carter said. It's incredible what the RIP has accomplished, because decades of litigation and legislation and, you know, all sorts of hostile activities didn't get us where we need to be. And this is our best chance to strike that balance and have, I think, broad support in the area to do both things, manage the water supply properly and protect the endangered species.
Okay, thanks. What I was referring to is that bullet, the slide that says EARIP status, and the last one said the USF&W is now reviewing the HCP and expected to issue an incidental take permit to allow several cities to continue using the aquifer. And I was thinking that was just the water, but you're saying it's the water because of the impact it has on
the species. Exactly.
I just misunderstood.
Right. The incidental take permit allows you a certain amount of take incidental to a lawful activity, which would be the pumping of the aquifer. So it's that way of saying, okay, you're doing the best you can, and we're going to go along with you. Even if there happens to be incidental take of the species, you've shown us you're going to mitigate for harm and minimize for impact. So we're waiting on that review. And Fish and Wildlife has been hand-in-hand with us at every meeting at the RIP and has sent us a lot of signals that they're going to look favorably. They can't tell us the outcome right now, but they would look favorably upon the application.
I skipped over making a comment that I wanted to make here, and that is, there was an analysis done early on in the RIP process by the Science Committee that if spring flows were to be protected only through reduction of pumping, it would require 87% reduction of pumping of the Edwards Aquifer. So that, you know, kind of was good incentive for people to get together and try to find a common solution that allowed the water source to, you know, still be usable and protect the species.
Okay, anybody else comments, questions? Thank you very much. Great work. I will authorize staff to publish the proposed rules in the Texas Register for the required public comment period. Committee item number 3, proposed land sale, Randall and Armstrong County, sale of approximately 2,014 acres at Caladura Canyon State Park. Ted Hollingsworth, is he just taking them? Yeah, okay, I didn't see you, Ted. Ted, would you please make the presentation?
Chairman, Commissioners, good afternoon. My name is Ted Hollingsworth. I'm with the Land Conservation Program. Back in 2008, we were very fortunate to acquire about 2,900 acres, a property called the Fortress Cliffs Ranch, overlooking Palo Duro Canyon State Park. About 6 miles of Canyon Rim, Fortress Cliffs Canyon Rim, arguably the most spectacular and prominent rim anywhere on the canyon, and overlooking our camping area. At the time we purchased that, it was on the market, and there was a very real threat it would be acquired for development, broken up into small ranchettes, rim front ranchettes, each one ending up with a home plainly visible from the park. And so we worked actually with the Trust for Public Land, and we're able to acquire that piece of property As you can see, it is critically located in terms of the view shed, but it came with a $1 million ranch house and about 1,500 acres of pasture, which we didn't consider to be contribute much to the mission of the park. And at the time we acquired it, we were very, we were very clear of our intention to to carve off that part of the park that did not contribute and sell that, and then keep the portion that overlooked the park for which we'd acquired. That one needs some water. We spent several months actually doing a topographic modeling and computer modeling to determine what parts of the ranch were visible from the park, where a person might build a two or three story house, for example, and that roof line be visible or not be visible from within the park. And as a result of that, we identified an area of about 2,000 acres shown here as a conservation easement area where a person could build, develop, operate, for example, and not be visible from inside the park. And with your concurrence about a year and a half ago, we actually identified a broker through an open market competitive process, identified a broker we've been very pleased with, who has actively marketed and shown this property for the last year and a half. In the last couple of months, we've identified a buyer, and I would add that we've only been willing to consider the sale of this property with a very restrictive conservation easement on it that would only allow it to be subdivided once into two tracts, neither of which could be smaller than 500 acres. Each tract would be allowed only one small residential footprint. And in the last couple of months, that buyer has come forward, made us an offer we consider to be a very generous offer. It is in excess of market value on the property and includes acceptance of all the terms in our draft conservation easement. Just to give you an idea of how that tract now lays on the rim, you can see here that if you're down in the park looking up at that rim, that area is set back far enough to offer that visual protection we were seeking. I would also add that we've been very clear with the public from the time we acquired this property in 2008 that it was our intention to not keep that $1 million ranch house or those pastures, that portion of the ranch that didn't really contribute to, aesthetically or recreationally to the mission, primary mission of the park. I also want to add that the funds from the sale of this land are land sale proceeds, but in addition, we did use land and water conservation funds, federal funds, in the purchase of that ranch in the first place. And so those funds are restricted in that they can only be used to acquire other lands that have recreational value and public access. We've already identified some acquisitions that would meet those criteria. With your concurrence to move forward, we'll run those past the National Park Service and make sure they concur. But again, those funds are restricted in their use. The buyer was willing to wait through a two-meeting process to close on this transaction, and which we really appreciate because we do want the opportunity to go back out to the public and make it very, very clear that we're not doing anything we haven't said we would do from the time we acquired this property in 2008, that the property we are selling does not add significantly to the recreational value of the park, and that we have been through a very competitive open market process and identified what we believe to be the right conservation buyer for this property. And if you concur, we'd like permission to begin the public notice and input process. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions or discussion?
You say the buyer is saying excess of the market price?
Yes, sir. We had an appraisal done on the property, a very detailed appraisal to determine what it was worth without the conservation easement, what the fair market value would be with the conservation easement. Worked closely with Carter, who has a lot of experience in this field, to list the property at significantly more than the appraised value. And I would add that we've rejected 7 or 8 offers now that were either because the price was too low or because they weren't
listed
We listed it higher, and the offer that we got was very close to our asking price, and was more than the appraised value. The individual knows that. His bank and broker, his bank and lender know that, and we're confident that the deal will close.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Anybody else have any questions or comments? I have wanted to ask about the non-federal money. You said the portion of the proceeds attributable to the federal funds are restricted. What about the other portion?
Well, that's a good question. Tim Hogsett is our point of contact on the Land and Water Conservation Fund, and with your concurrence to proceed, I'm going to sit down with him next week, and we're going to review not only the properties that we would convert the federal interest to, but we're also going to explore whether or not the feds would allow us to use, there is an excess of state match in this particular property, if they would allow us to use that excess for additional match to bring additional Land and Water Conservation Fund properties to the table to increase the value of that land sale proceed. At present, we don't know the answer to that question. We've never attempted that.
Thank you. If there's no further discussion, I'll authorize staff to begin public notice and input process. Thank you, Ted. You're on the next one. Committee Item 4, request for storage lease, Anderson County Natural Gas Storage Lease at the Englian Wildlife Management.
Chairman, Commissioners, good afternoon. My name is Ted Hollingsworth. I'm with the Land Conservation Program. This is actually the second reading of this item. You saw it in November and authorized staff to proceed with the public notice process. A gas storage developer has requested permission to inject gas into a depleted gas formation under a portion of the Gus Engeling Wildlife Management Area, located between Athens and Palestine in East Texas. The portion of the WMA that would be affected is a very small percentage. It's about 547 acres in the south end of the wildlife management area. The formation that they want access to is about 9,000 feet below the surface. It was depleted of gas several decades ago, but it's a coarse sand formation and geologically is ideal for repressurizing with gas. What is done is that these formations are repressurized during times of high production, low demand, and then the gas is re-extracted and put back into pipelines and sold when there's more demand or when the price justifies it. There are already 20 depleted gas fields in Texas with the current anticipated glut in gas. From fields around Texas, especially the Eagle Ford in South Texas, there's an increasing demand for storage capacity. This 547 acres would be part of a larger lease of about 2,000 acres, the rest of which would be on private property. The only occupancy of our surface would be to replug three existing conventional vertical wells that were plugged many years ago, but which they would re-drill and re-plug to make sure there's no, they don't lose any product through those existing wells. Based on the feedback we got from the commission in the November meeting, we went back to the requestor with increased demand for compensation for the use of that formation. And as a result, we've arrived at a compensation schedule that met your request and, in fact, exceeded it. There would be an initial damage payment for coming onto the surface to replug the wells. In addition, there would be an annual per acre payment for use of that 9,000 foot deep sand strata that would be increased each year on the basis of the consumer price index. In addition, it's well known that when a conventional field is drained of gas, there's still a considerable amount of gas in that field, and they have ways of tagging the product they inject so that if native product is removed, it would be ours, and we would be compensated in full for that product. So I think we met all of those conditions that you asked us to have at the November meeting. And if you're in agreement, staff recommends that you adopt this motion. The executive director is authorized to negotiate terms and conditions under which a gas storage lease may be issued for the storage of gas under a portion of the Gus Engeling Wildlife Management Area in Anderson County, and to issue a gas storage lease under those conditions. Be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions or discussion? Thank you, Ted. I'll place this item on the Thursday commission meeting agenda for public comment and action. Thank you, sir. Committee item number 5, land donation, Galveston County, approximately 47 acres at Galveston Island State Park. Mr. Corky Coolman.
Good morning. For the record, Corky Coolman, our guest. Good afternoon. This is a Galveston. This is the second reading of this project. The first reading was in March of 2011. The reason there's been so much time in between is because of negotiations between the owners of the land and the Corps of Engineers. This track is a mitigation site that they were mitigating for a subdivision they did. They're wanting to donate it to Parks and Wildlife. In order for us to take it, we will be responsible for part of the mitigation, which basically for our part that we will have to complete will just be some planting, some uplands vegetation, and planting some in the wetlands. The park is fully prepared to do this with the Friends group and volunteers, and think they accomplish this with very little cost to the agency. If you look at this, it is the green is the state park, and the donation track is right adjacent to 13 Mile Road. If you look at the little indent right in the middle of the track to the west, that's the little Wagner Oil track that we had pursued at one time but never were able to do anything with.
So where is that? What are you looking at?
If you look, the little indent right where it says 13 Mile Road, right to the north of that, there's a little, there's like a 4-acre track right there. There's a little indent along the road. We had pursued that at one point, but we're unable to do anything.
And who owns that?
Wagner Oil.
Brian Wagner.
Yeah.
So I figured. But what are they doing with it, you know?
Nothing. He's a willing seller. We can't afford it. He was asking like something in the neighborhood of $3 a square foot, something like that.
I'm hunting with him on Friday. I'll talk to him about it.
I think a lot of people have talked about it.
We talked to him about it.
He's been very nice. I've visited with him several times. He's been very nice about it, but he just says that because of partners in the project that he, you know. So having said that, this is the motion that you'll see before you tomorrow. The Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission authorizes the executive director to take all necessary steps to accept the donation of a 47-acre tract in addition to Galveston Island State Park.
Questions for Corky? Corky, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay, I'll place this item on the Thursday commission meeting agenda for public comment and action. Also just want to inform you all that item 3 in finance, Gamebird stamp budget overview, is no longer on the agenda for this afternoon. So those who are waiting for that, just letting you know for planning purposes. This time I'd like to announce that pursuant to the requirements of Chapter 551 Government Code, referred to as the Open Meetings Act, an executive session will be held at this time for the purpose of deliberation of real estate matters under Section 551.072 of the Texas Open Meetings Act, seeking legal advice from the General Counsel under Section 551.071 of the Open Meetings Act. We'll now recess for executive session. So we're back. We'll now reconvene the regular session of the Conservation Committee on January 25th, 2012 at 2:40 p.m. Committee Item 6, request for utility easement, Hall County, transmission line from Tuco to Wheeler, Caprock Canyon Trailway. Ted Hollingsworth.
Chairman, commissioners, good afternoon. For the record, my name is still Ted Hollingsworth, and I'm with the Land Conservation Program. This item is in response to a request we've had for a high-tension utility easement that would cross, if built as proposed, would cross the Capron Canyon's trailway about 3 miles from its eastern terminus in Estien, up in the panhandle of Texas. The trailway is a fairly significant recreational resource. It's a little over 64 miles long, crosses a bunch of diverse habitats, crosses 46 bridges, goes through an old railroad tunnel. And we have, staff has gone to a great deal of trouble over the years to protect the visual integrity of the trailway. But we do are looking at a request. It's been filed with the Public Utility Commission. Texas Parks and Wildlife has been involved as an intervener in that process. There is currently on the table a settlement route that's been negotiated with a number of private landowners with Texas Parks and Wildlife. It does cross the trailway, but it crosses the trailway in an area that is not one of the higher used areas of the trailway. Staff considers it to be the second best route of those that were considered, over 100 segments of routes that were considered during the course of these negotiations. You can see in this map, the little purple line is the settlement route that's currently being under consideration by the applicant and the PUC. You can see where that is in relationship to the Caprock Canyon State Park and the trailway. A number of measures have been worked out with the applicant that would minimize the impacts not just to the trailway, but to fish and wildlife resources along the entire length of that proposed high-tension utility line. And because of those measures that have been taken, staff request permission to begin the public notice and input process. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Ted? Thanks, Ted. All right, I'll authorize staff to begin the public notice and input process. Regarding committee item number 7, briefing regarding water distribution pipeline easement at Monahan Sandhills State Park, Ward and Winkler Counties. No further action is required at this time. This committee has completed its business.